This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Try This at Home, our MCO-inspired series on picking up new skills and activities during this period. I'm Hazrul Ashraf alongside Kelvin Yee.
Today we're going to be exploring getting organized from two different perspectives. Firstly, organizing the home with the KonMari method made famous by Marie Kondo, and then by trying to understand Bujo or bullet journaling, a form of organizing your life on paper that has a whole system to it, but that many people find really beneficial.
That's right. And while I'm inspired by Marie Kondo's concept of organizing our homes, I think the biggest reservation I have is this 30-book limit we should all stick to. You know, while I do like to keep my room clean, I think there are just some things where I draw the line when it comes to how I run my personal space, and this is definitely one of them. When it comes to writing, though, I'm just a mess. There's definitely no bullet points in my moleskin journal, and I'm the type of person who likes unruled paper because what are boundaries?
You know, Hazrul, lucky for you today, that's exactly what we're going to learn today, how to organize your home and your journal. If you have any thoughts or questions on organizing your home or how to structure your written thoughts, you can send us a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
And first up, we have on the line Rebecca Jo Rushdie, who is a KonMari consultant at SparkJoy Malaysia. Rebecca, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, guys, for inviting me. I'm really excited to share more about the KonMari method with your audience.
Lovely. So with this MCO, a lot of us have more time on our hands and are trying to create, you know, a good personal space to, you know, have some personal space and clear our minds. So is now a good time to tidy up our homes then?
Absolutely. There's no better time than to do it right now. Because, you know, I think we all have felt the effect before. Like when you're in a cluttered room, when you're in a cluttered environment, it actually adds, heightens your cortisol levels. And so it increases your stress level. So right now, especially in these times of uncertainty, we have like, you know, our kids piled up on top of us. We're trying to work. We're trying to do housework as well. So having a calm home that is organized will work efficiently for you. Our homes are working overtime for us right now. So it's one of the fundamentals of the KonMari method is to show gratitude for all of your belongings and just your space in general. And this actually just changes you know, the vibrations, like your vibes on everything. It really brings those good vibes that we all need right now.
Yeah, and on that note, I guess, what is the main difference then between a regular run of spring cleaning versus using the KonMari method instead?
So this is why I am so passionate about it. So my mother, she's a tidy consultant, but with a different method. And she's always been like quite OCD. And so I grew up in that sort of environment. But the reason why I became so so keen on the KonMari method is because the foundation of it is to mindfully choose things that spark joy in your life, and therefore you're creating mental space. So there's a gratitude practice that is threaded amongst the whole practice. So you're not just throwing things away because it's crappy or it's not functioning anymore, mm-hmm. but you're able to turn it around and actually show gratitude for all of your belongings, even the things that you're letting go of. And this is the pivotal point because it actually rewires your way of thinking, and there's a lot of positive psychology attached to it as well.
Now, what quick tips do you have for us to get us started?
So I would say, the most fundamental rule number one is commit yourself to tidying. I think this is where a lot of people get a little bit shaken by. You know, it might be limiting beliefs that's holding them back. I do meet a lot of people, they'll say, oh, I can never do that. That's not never achievable. And so it's committing, right? And I always compare it to working out because, you know, you can watch YouTube videos of fitness, you know, workouts, but ultimately, just by watching it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to get fit, right? You actually have to commit yourself to it. And what we're doing is we're making gratitude into a habit.
Right. And you know, just based on what you said earlier about the importance of showing appreciation and all that, and I guess how it compares to other ways of tidying up your home, emotion seems to be a very central theme here, one that is of heavy importance. Why is that so key to the KonMari method?
Oh, you know, it's like we actually hold a lot of emotional baggage in our physical belongings. Mm. So there's a lot of times, like, you know, maybe even just little things such as I just coached a corporate wellness workshop, and I was sharing with them as well. So when we are letting go of clothing, let's say that, you know, I was sharing them with them my experience of having a work outfit. I was working in a very toxic work environment before. And just looking at that dress, it brings, even though it's a beautiful dress, it brings up a lot of bad memories. Maybe it's something from your, you know, your ex as well. But by clinging on to it, you're clinging on to it physically, it actually deters you. It actually creates this blockage. You're not able to flow and you're not able to move on from that.
So this might sound counterintuitive, especially as people look to save money during this time. But do you need anything in order to efficiently organize and clean out our homes?
No, and that is one of the golden rules of Marie Kondo. So the KonMari method recommends that you don't buy any of those, you know, those pretty organizing tools that you might find in all these various stores around town, because that actually encourages hoarding. You're actually just putting them nicely, it's displayed nicely, but you have to get the foundation right first, which is decluttering. You have to get rid of things, and then at the final step, then you can look into beautifying your space.
Right, and then speaking of spaces, how would you declutter according to how different spaces function? I think right now, since quite a number of us are working from home, and you know, how would you get around building a space that's conducive for work?
Oh, yeah. So I was sharing this yesterday as well. So basically, you know, for me, I like to work at my dining table because it just has like a lot of light as well. And this is also where we have all of our meals. And my kids are also doing homeschooling on these tables too. But it's just to set the tone, just even something as simple as just wiping down the table and clearing off the table. It sets the tone and your brain will switch modes. Okay, it's like, okay, I'm in teacher mode now. Okay, I'm in work mode now. Now it's mealtime. You know, so it's something that it seems so tiny, like, you know, even the tips of how do we, I'm really into how we can biohack and just make our bodies also work and our brains work more efficiently as well. So just little things such as you make the bed in the morning, it sets the tone, you know, like if possible, don't work from your bed because your bed should be a sacred space where you should actually, this is a resting space. So you don't want to blur the lines either, because I know a lot of friends who are working easily, like, you know, 14 hours a day. There's no end because you're at home and the lines get really blurred as well, if that makes sense to you. So it's like we have to carve out that precious space for our work, and also even to put a time limit too. And this is something that I feel is really important for our mental health right now.
How much time does it usually take to organize a room using the KonMari method, and what kind of factors does it depend on?
So before we go into that question, I just also want to reiterate the point that the KonMari method, actually one of the rules is we have to order category by category, not room by room. This is where doing it category by category will actually set you up for success. So she actually has those five categories, which is you start with clothing, and then it's your books, your paper. Kimono means miscellaneous in Japanese. And then the final category is sentimental items. And this is because we're working our decision-making muscles. So we are starting off with the things that are easier to make decisions with. And then the final category is sentimental, because that takes a lot more emotional work to go through. So that being said, so how long it will take? It actually one of the KonMari consultants actually came up with a cute formula as well. So it depends on how many belongings you have. Multiply that by your decision making speed, and then also like how big your house is, and then that will equate to how long it will take. So I've had clients where, you know, they've done their entire closet in 2 hours, but then you will also meet people who will need 17 hours just to do a closet.
Right. And actually, because of the amount of time, is it actually okay to leave a category sort of half finished and then return to it at a later time?
You can, because actually, so some people find it really daunting. So her method promotes that you do everything all at once. So let's say, for example, you're doing a closet because that's the first category, and you take everything out of your closet. You know, you're not just decluttering within the drawers or within the closet. You have to take everything out. You know, I'm sure you guys have seen the pictures or like, you know, the from Netflix as well, like where everyone makes that huge mountain of clothing. And the reason why is because we are triggered predominantly by our sight and our hearing. So when you have that visual trigger, it will snap into your brain just thinking, oh my gosh, like I've have so much, you know, like, wow, that is like such a big waste of money, or I just have too much, I have enough. So with that trigger, then you're able to start rewiring your brain as well. It will actually change your shopping habits and your behavior. And that's why you actually do end up saving money ultimately through the KonMari method, because you're not just buying things aimlessly, mindlessly, or even doing panic buying as well, because you have this clear mental audit of everything that you own already.
How can we factor in different personalities and preferences when it comes to tidying up, especially since some of us may share a space mm-hmm. with a housemate, you know, who's very different yeah. from us?
So it's recommended just focus on yourself first, because this is a question that comes up quite frequently. You have to focus on yourself first. You know, before we try to fix other people's problems, like we have to look inwards. And this is why it's such a great method, because it really increases your self-awareness as well. And hence, just through this simple method, you're able to just live life in a much more calm and positive manner. So you lead by example. You do your own stuff first, rather than, you know, trying to force people to tidy, because nobody likes to be forced to do things, right? So you want to inspire people to also want to change their life, and you'll be able to guide them through it too once they see the positive effects that it's had on you.
And once we have KonMari the space, how do you maintain it in that tidied up state?
So this is what's so fantastic about it. Like, you know, you invest this time into laying down the foundation. So Marie Kondo calls this Tidying Festival. And I love this because it has such a positive spin on it. A lot of people might see it as such a huge chore. You know, they have such a negative outlook on tidying that you're going into it, you're not setting yourself up for success, right? Think of it as, wow, when you invest this time, this initial time, you will be able to save time in the future to actually do what matters most to you. So because when you do your tidying festival, one of the main things is you have to create a home for every belonging, right? So this is how you create that mental space. When you're putting things away, you aren't thinking about where should I put this? Oh, where should I put that? Everything has a home already. So this is why I'm also really passionate about teaching children about this method as well. Once they get the hang of it, all you have to do is delegate to them. They know exactly where everything needs to go back to. And tidying becomes so easy. It just becomes like muscle memory, because you physically know where everything goes. And another practice is called joy checking. So after you finish your tidying festival, then you will go through the joy checking periodically. Usually in our household, we do it about every 2 months, because my kids are quite young. They're 6 and almost 4. And, you know, kids grow out of clothes, right? So we do go through their items. We joy check together their toys, even our belongings too. Me and my husband, we actually do a joy check of our entire house before the end of the year. That is like a must, because, you know, it actually sets the tone for the new year that's coming, and we're able to reflect on what we need to carry forward into our future and what we are ready to let go with gratitude. So doing this joy check, it takes so quick. So I was showing during the workshop last week, I also did a small demonstration of my kids doing a joy check of their shoes, and it literally takes less than 2 minutes for them to do, because, and it also encourages them to be confident in their decisions. They're not second guessing themselves. They know what joy means to them. They have this individual definition of what joy means to them, and it's not influenced by anybody else. So this is also really important, because, you know, as adults as well, we might have been we might be second guessing ourselves, or, you know, we lose our confidence along the way. Maybe it's from, you know, getting scolded, or like, you know, things that might have happened when we're younger as well, or just a fear. We have a fear of saying the wrong things too. So we end up second guessing ourselves, and we end up clinging onto belongings that no longer serve us.
Now, some people will inevitably find tidying up stressful. So what advice would you have for them, and how can we start and get past this mental roadblock of, you know, everything is so daunting, cleaning is so difficult?
So this is all, this is where the commitment level comes into place, right? Like, because we can listen to all these podcasts, we can watch all the videos and read all the books as well, but ultimately we need to commit ourselves. Like, what there must be something deep inside that you have this desire to want change. A lot of the times, oftentimes people just feel this fear, but we have to just overcome it. A lot of times it's just a matter of, we just have to take the plunge. The thought of it is more daunting than the actual act itself. You know, like, I have a lot of clients who will be like, oh my gosh, this is the category that I'm most afraid of. And they're really, you know, there is like a little bit of resistance, but we just make it fun. We pump up some good music. We have a, you know, we have a strong cup of coffee, and we just get into that mindset. Obviously, don't do it when you're feeling stressed. So you just have to be in that right mindset. That whatever it takes to get you into that mood, like if you want to put on some essential oil to, for like some uplifting scents, all those kind of things. So only you yourself knows like how you'll feel, how you'll get pumped up for it. So do what you need to do to fill your own cup, and then take that plunge.
There you go, folks. Rebecca, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much, Kelvin and Hezrel. And I hope to chat with you guys soon again.
Yeah, likewise.
Stay safe.
Bye.
Bye. That's Rebecca Jo Rushdie, KonMari consultant on freeing up our spaces. You can find more tips on decluttering by logging on to her Instagram or Facebook page at Spark Joy Malaysia. We'll be back after this with Roshini Mukaya to take us through bullet journaling. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Try This at Home with Hezrel and Kelvin. Earlier, we had a conversation with Rebecca Jo Rushdie, who is a KonMari consultant at Spark Joy Malaysia, about how to declutter and free up our homes.
Now, we're crossing over to Roshini Mukaya, mental health blogger at Cukup.club. Roshini has also been bullet journaling for over 2 years. In the meantime, if you have any thoughts or questions, you can send us a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Roshini, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
To start off, could you give us an overview of what bullet journaling is and what it entails?
So at the core of it, the bullet journal is basically a very minimal and a very dynamic analog system. And it can serve you as a planner, a to-do list, tracker, or even your diary. It could be any of this or all of it or none of it. It's really up to you, because every person's bullet journal or bujo would look quite different. The creator of the bullet journal, Ryder Carroll, he wanted a very simple tool to help him organize his tasks. But I personally customized my bullet journal as more of a mental health tracker and as a diary. At the end of the day, the bullet journal starts off as a blank notebook, but it is really up to you to interpret it according to what are your needs and preferences are at any time.
How does it differ from other forms of journaling or list making?
So Ryder Carroll, the creator, I think he said it best, that unlike a very typical planner, list, or journal, the bullet journal, it can help you, number one, track your past, two, organize your present, and three, plan for your future. And how does it do this is that it can achieve all this because it's such a dynamic system, right? Because it's a blank notebook, i.e. you build a system as you go along. Now, unlike a typical planner or a list, which already comes with a specific template already set in stone, a bullet journal is just a blank notebook and you curate it along the way according to your preferences at any time. So let's just say at one point you set up a system and eventually you don't like it and you want to try something new, you can, because, again, it's a blank notebook.
You mentioned that you use bullet journaling for mental health. Could you elaborate on this? And why would you recommend bullet journaling to others?
Mm. So I personally use the bullet journal. It's more of a mental health tracker and it's a diary because I think that's what I really need in my life at this time, just to feel some sense of control over it. So how do I track my mental health? I use three separate trackers, i.e. I use a habit tracker, I use a mood tracker, and also a sleep tracker. I pair it together with my knee band to track how much sleep and deep sleep I'm getting, and I'm able to kind of shift my practices throughout the day according to all this tracker, which gives me a really good insight into my well-being. So that's how it kind of helped me in terms of my mental health. Would I recommend it to others? Most definitely. I would say, why wouldn't you want like a customized system to help you get control of your life? Why would I recommend it? It's because, number one, if you are looking for a tool that can help you feel a bit more control, you have the bullet journal for that. If you want to feel a bit more, if you want like something like a creative process for you, then you can also attempt the bullet journal.
You know, just listening to the whole tracking process, it is intimidating me a bit, especially as someone who doesn't practice it. How would you suggest for people to begin setting it up?
Sure. I completely understand why it could be very intimidating, because when you're looking at all these very elaborate trackers or templates online, it can be very scary because they're so artistic as well sometimes.
Yeah.
But I just want to assure that this is actually just one interpretation of the bullet journal. It just so happens that it just happens to be the most popular one because it looks really good on Instagram. But honestly, the system that the creator writer had intended is very basic and it's very minimal because he himself just needed a tool that was very quick and efficient. He has already set up a video on YouTube called How to Bullet Journal Start Here, which will teach you how to bullet journal in under 4 minutes. It's honestly that simple. I have also written a very simple starter guide to bullet journaling on my website, chukup.club. And if you are interested, you can find it at bit.ly/notstartbujo.
Now, does the type of notebook you choose matter? I remember you saying something about blank pages.
Yes. So at the core of it, you just need a blank notebook. Of course, there's many different kinds of notebooks. You have a ruled notebook, a grid notebook, or a dotted notebook. The kind of notebook actually doesn't matter as long as it is blank. Yeah.
And then what would you say are the key concepts of Bujo?
What are the key concepts of Bujo? It's a little bit hard for me to explain it over just audio, so I highly recommend that people who are interested check out Ryder's video, How to Bullet Journal. But basically, it comes down to several processes. Starting with a blank notebook, you first start off with an index and a future log. A future log is basically just a list of all the months in the year. This is where you would jot down important dates or reminders for future months. Mm-hmm. This is then followed by your monthly log. Very simply, it's just a simple list view of your entire month's happenings, complemented by your monthly priorities. This then kind of brings us to daily logs, which is where bullet journaling really gets its name. Please refer to Ryder's aforementioned video. Basically, daily log is where you would list out your tasks or events or notes for the day, but in a very shorthand and organized way. At the end of the day, you will review it again. If there are any leftover tasks, this is where you would then key it in for the next day. Finally, we have collections, and this is so powerful. A collection really could be anything. It could be your mood tracker, it could be your meal prepping template, a watch list of movies, a list of your yearly goals, or even kind of like a project tracker. Like for me, myself, I use a collection for my project. Specifically, I'm tracking my progress in my master's preparation plan. It sounds like a lot, but honestly, it's very simple. You're just starting out with a blank notebook, an index, a future log, a monthly log, daily log, and if you want it, some collections.
Now, do you integrate work and personal life in your bullet journal? I know you mentioned mental health, which is something personal.
Yeah. So I actually don't integrate my work and personal bujo. I have a separate bujo for my work, which is actually very minimal and very straightforward. It only lists out my tasks for the day, and it's just like the original writer template. My personal bujo, on the other hand, is actually very decorated, and that's because I just really enjoy this space and this creative process to make this art diary thing for 5 minutes each day. That being said, I do know that a lot of people, especially those who use the bujo for professional or productivity purposes, tend to kind of just have the one.
So there are a lot of posts on Instagram by bullet journalists, and oftentimes it does look like art and creativity is a big part of it, and yours is as well. You know, we see elaborate doodles, drawings, charts, even, you know, cutouts from printouts and all that. What function does art and creativity play in bullet journaling?
So I just want to clarify that, you know, incorporating all this artistic and creative element is a personal choice, and it is not necessary to start a bullet journal. But as one such person who does engage in this, I must admit that I just really like the creative process of, you know, creating this notebook every day, page by page. It is my private moment to have each night to create it the same way, you know, other people would relax through their adult coloring books. It's very meditative. Talking about, you know, charts and drawings, they're actually very useful, especially if you're trying to track something. I.e., as I said just now, I use the charts, specifically my mood tracker, sleep tracker, and something else, my habit tracker, which I fill in every day, and it gives me really good insight. But that's my process, but that might not be the case for you, and that's okay, because as I said, the bujo really can be interpreted in so many ways, be it very elaborately or very minimally with none of this.
So how would the process then differ for someone who prefers a more elaborate versus someone who prefers a more minimalist approach? And, you know, like, for instance, when I journal, I can get a bit messy, and as minimalist as I want to be sometimes, it just looks like a big blob of writing in my book.
Yeah. I think this is a common thing that I have always heard about bullet journal. I think people are very caught up with how their bullet journal appears, when in truth, all that matters is how the bullet journal functions to you. Even when we're talking about, you know, it being elaborate or minimal, these are purely discussions of aesthetics, not function. If you're looking at writer's original bullet journal template, it's actually very, very bare basics, and the core of it never changed. So if you're someone who does want a minimal bullet journal, writer's template, it's already ready for you. But let's just say if you want a slightly aesthetic minimal bullet journal or a fully blown decorator one, or even if you don't really know yet, a great way to start is just by looking into our references online. Personally, for me, I highly recommend just going into YouTube and just search up bullet journal flip-throughs or plan with me videos. Just look at what thumbnails you're most attracted to. For example, when I was getting started, I noticed that I was super attracted to all the video thumbnails that had very collage-heavy bullet journals. Alternatively, one of my friends who was also interested in bullet journaling, she was more interested in work-oriented bujos, were a bit more minimal. So I would say this is definitely a great place to start. Just look up references online first.
How do you then develop and maintain the habit of journaling every day?
Simply put, you just have to create the bujo for yourself and your needs, and not just to make it look nice or pretty. I say this because if your bujo is truly intuitive and it really services your needs, you are going to be using it every day because it becomes so integral and it's so satisfying to use. But if you're caught up with making it very pretty or perfect, you're just going to run out of steam really quick. And that's why the habit drops off for some people, right? Because it gets frustrating. And that's why it's so important for me that I make sure that whatever bullet journal that I'm doing, especially when I'm drafting it at the beginning of the year, that it is as simple, as self-intuitive, and as satisfying as possible. Yeah.
And with that, Roshini, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
That was Roshini Mukaya, bullet journalist and mental health blogger at chukup.club. You can find more bullet journaling tips from her at bit.ly/natstartbujo. And you've been listening to Try This at Home. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.